After that lengthy introduction, Tamahar leaned over to me and said, "Who is she talking about?" So just to balance the playing field there a little bit, you know. Jai Rai Tamadava Punjabi Hari. Jai Rai Tamadava Punjabi Hari. Gopi Jalabhava Girvara Rahari. Gopi Jalabhava Girvara Rahari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Chiravana Chahari. Yamuna Chiravana Chahari. Jai Rai Tamadava Punjabi Hari. Jai Rai Tamadava Punjabi Hari. Jai Rai Tamadava Punjabi Hari. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Shishya Arashama Sundra ki jai, Gaura Prema Nandi, Hari Hari Bo. Hare Krishna. So it's nice to be here in Alachua with all the devotees. So I was going to read a very simple verse and share some reflections. It's one that's spoken upon a lot. A few reflections on Kartik. Especially nice to be here in the darshan of Sri Sri Radha Shama Sundar in Kartik. They definitely bring the Vrindavan mood. And the way you all worship them here definitely brings about the Vrindavan mood. It's really wonderful. I first visited Alachua when there was a little tiny trailer somewhere over there. And there was only Gornitai in kind of a half-lit room. You know, get better when the sun came up. But we've made a lot of progress here. So this is Bhagavad Gita 9:27. So let's all just chant it together, okay? Yat karosti yat snasti yajdadosti tadasi yat tat tapasasti kunteya tat kurushva marapanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Jai Prabhupada. Hari Bol. Thus, it is the duty of everyone to mold his life or her life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance. Everyone has to work for maintenance of his body and soul together, and Krishna recommends herein that one should work for him. Everyone has to eat something to live. Therefore, he should accept the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. Any civilized man has to perform some religious ritualistic ceremonies. Therefore, Krishna recommends do it for me. And this is called archana. Everyone has a tendency to give something in charity. Krishna says, give it to me. And this means that all surplus money accumulated should be utilized in furthering the Krishna consciousness movement. Nowadays, people are very much inclined to the meditational process, which is not practical in this age. But if anyone practices meditating on Krishna 24 hours a day by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra round his beads, he surely is the greatest meditator and the greatest yogi as substantiated by the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I'm just going to go ahead because there's such close parallel and I wanted to maybe read part of the purport too. I think I gave the wrong number. 34. I did give the wrong number. Manmanabha vam dakto madhyati mam namaskuru mamma vaishtasi yuktvaivam atmanam matparayanaha. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me, and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. And just one part of the purport. One should therefore engage his mind in the eternal form, the primal form of Krishna. With conviction in his heart that Krishna is the supreme, he should engage himself in worship. There are hundreds and thousands of temples in India for the worship of Krishna and now everywhere else around the world, by Prabhupada's grace. And devotional service is practiced there. When such practice is made, one has to offer obeisances to Krishna. One should lower his head before the deity and engage his mind, his body, his activities, everything. That will make one fully absorbed in Krishna without deviation. This will help one transfer to the Krishna Loka. One should not be deviated by unscrupulous commentators. One must engage in the nine different processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting about Krishna. Pure devotional service is the highest achievement of human society. Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. So I was thinking, this being Kartik season, in my mind, Kartik kind of two main things. One, it's a wonderful time of meditation on the sweetness of the Lord and some of his most intimate pastimes as we're reading and or singing with the Dhamma Dharastika prayers. And it's also a time, as Mukhi reminded us, to do a little extra austerity. Can the guys at least move a little closer? I know mask policy's gone, but do we still have to distance 27 feet? Or what's the... No? Is it okay? Thank you very much. Especially because you tell I need new glasses. I know there's people there. Ladies can move closer if you like to, but if you're comfortable there, that's fine. But at least, you know... Yeah, sometimes I cough, but it's usually just something in my throat. There's no disease connected there. So two things: it's a meditation on the intimacy of Krishna and his beautiful pastimes, and also it's a time of increased austerity, a time of thinking, what else can I do for Krishna, for my guru, for the world, for my spiritual progress that will help me make progress in life. So it's those two things. So I thought I'll talk a little bit about both of those. So first, the austerity part. And it's interesting because austerity is not a word that people really understand much in the world these days. I know if I tell people like the regulative principles, or I like to talk about the four principles of religion, and even austerity is, people, it's not a politically correct word. So I oftentimes use the word discipline, which there are people like, they relate to that, right? To send your kids to kung fu class to learn discipline and all of that. So that's something people can relate to. But the idea of austerity, people think, I don't do austerities. I don't want to do austerities. I mean, your religion's about austerities? Forget it. I don't want anything to do with that. Maybe in the past, there was a concept of being monastics and you perform austerity and you live in little cells and you only eat once a day. That's not what people are thinking life's for these days. But then, if we think about modern lifestyle, or if we encourage them to think a little bit about it, life is full of austerities. Doesn't matter who you are or what you're doing, your life is austere. Because austerity, in essence, means you give up, you sacrifice something for some other purpose. So just like, a lot of kids around here, like, if you want to get an education, you sacrifice to get an education. You like to play all day long, right? But just like mom or dad or the truant officer, like in Prabhupada's time, right? They had a guy come and tie him up with a rope. Don't do that these days. Where's Lila Sukha? I didn't say that. Strike that from the record. But that was Prabhupada's experience. They tied him up with a rope and they took him to school. And after a few days, he realized he liked it was okay. But so you have to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice the playtime to go to school. And if you get a job, you have to sacrifice your freedom. You've got to, maybe not here so much, but other parts of the world, country, for sure, you got to be in rush hour traffic for 20 minutes or 40 minutes or an hour and a half. That's an austerity. And I won't mention names, but I was just visiting some devotees the other day, and they were talking about the boss. Like, some people have nice bosses, some people don't have nice bosses. Having a boss is an austerity. And sometimes it's really austere. You know, maybe one reason, like, maybe it's a generational gap. You know, you hear that the older generation kind of has a feeling you should stick with your job for a while, but Generation Z averages about, like, 36 months at a job. You know, the day they come in, they're adding to their resume because they're already thinking, I'm not going to stay here very long. But it's austerity to stay in a place and work with someone. Even if you take a vacation, right? Say, okay, it's a big discussion. Where are we going to go? At least where I live. You're going to go to the beach, you're going to go to the mountains. So if you go to the beach, that's an austerity because you chose not to go to the mountains. So you're going to deal with sunburn instead of mosquitoes, right? Or if you go to the mountains, you're going to deal with mosquitoes and you won't see the sun, etc. So, you know, there's always some price to pay. And just like we had two political leaders here the other day, very nice men, they came and participated in the One Day for Ukraine event. As political leaders, and we may think, you know, the big political leaders on a big scale, there's, okay, they live in a big house, they've got a lot of money, they're famous, they've got power, this and that. But there's a lot of austerities. You know, to start with, you got to, like, be nice to people you don't like. You got to go to events that you don't want to, right? You have to kiss ugly babies. You know, there's a lot of austere, and you got to smile through the, I mean, that's austere. You know, they have to stand up and do things they don't necessarily like to do. So they're also making sacrifices. And I was thinking, in a real practical way, you know, just life means, if you want to marry a rich guy, okay, there's a good chance he's not a nice guy. It's, you know, it's just the reality. Maybe he is. There's a lot of wonderful rich guys that are nice. But there's, if your goal is, I want to marry a rich guy, you may get yourself set up because life's austerity. So I practice the austerity of, he's not a nice guy, but he's got money. Okay, conversely, you may think, well, I really want to marry a beautiful woman. Okay, now I'm sure everyone in the room is, there's a lot of very kind, loving, affectionate, humble, beautiful women. And then there's others, you know. So if your desire is, I really want to marry a beautiful woman, there's some austerity comes along with that. You know, she might be, you know, she likes to put you down in front of your friends. That's really painful for the male ego or this or that. So many things. So that whatever you do in this life, there's some austerity. So when Krishna says, you know, do that austerity for me, whatever sacrifices or austerity, do it for me. We're not so far off from the fact that everybody's performing austerity. The question is, we're analyzing what's the goal of it. And of course, ultimately, from our Shastra, from our Acharyas, Prabhupada often say, even you gain so many things, at the end you lose it all. Even you perform austerity, say, okay, I'll put up with this lady who really doesn't like me, but she's pretty, you know? Or I'll put up with this guy that's not, he doesn't treat me very nice, but he's got a lot of money, I get to spend money, and okay. But even if you do that, at the end, you lose the money. Or she loses the beauty, and you're both going to die anyway. So it's all temporary. And like I just heard again, introductory arrival address, Prabhu was in France. And of course, what's he going to talk about in France? He likes to mention Napoleon. You know, and he was very respectful. He talked to, Prabhu was very knowledgeable about what was going on in the world. He talked about liberty. He didn't use the accent, so I went, liberty, equality, fraternity. That's like the values. Like America's like freedom, right? Like when the Pope was here, he spoke at the House of, Senate and Congress, and both, what do they call it when they come together? And he said, I'm very happy to be here in the land of the free and the home of the brave. And they all broke into applause because, like, oh, wow, he knows us, you know, he appreciates us. So you go to France, you say liberty, equality, fraternity, that's what their whole revolution was about. That's their concept. Of course, they're contradictory terms. They don't work. You can't be completely equal and completely liberal at the same time. First year political science will teach you that, but they still cling to it. So Prabhupada was acknowledging that and saying, as we've all heard, so where's Napoleon? The arch is there, you know, France is there, but where's Napoleon? So Prabhupada would regularly make that point that basically material world's a bad deal. It's a bad deal because you do perform austerities and what do you get at the end? So people are under this illusion, I'm not performing austerities, I'm just enjoying life, right? You know, anybody old guys go to college? Young people too? When I went to college, college meant you got a degree in between the parties. Okay? And the parties meant the next morning thinking, oh my God, my head hurts. Oh my God, my head hurts. And then you start asking yourself, so that was fun? I had an experience, one of my stories I used to tell too much, going to some party and having and thinking, this is so boring. This is so, I am so bored. And this person, this other guy was there, said, yeah, this is a terrible party. Were you at the one last week at such and such place? I said, no, I missed that one. He said, that was a party. That in my mind, right? Lamentation. Now I know from the Gita, I'm lamenting. I didn't know then, I'm lamenting. So like 2 weeks later, true story, I'm in another party thinking, this is so boring. This is so boring. And this guy says to me, he says, yeah, this is really boring. Were you at the one 2 weeks ago? I said, I was there. That was also boring. You know, it was austere because you got to wait all week and you got to, whatever, pay $10 to get, whatever it is. There's definitely some austerity, but what's the benefit you get? So that's like our message. That's one of our messages to the world. Don't think you're not, you know, don't think you're not performing austerities, folks out there. Everyone's performing austerities. And therefore, the scripture, Krishna here is saying, do it for me. Perform your austerities for him. Work for him. And I had an interesting experience when I landed here in Alachua. My ride was a little late, which was great. I didn't mind because the geese guy I talked about the other day. I had a lot of rounds left, so I'm chanting in the parking lot. And this lady comes up, and she said, where are you from? And I said, Michigan. I said, wherever, D.C. That's where I'm from now. And I think she asked me something like, what are you dressed like that for? And I said, well, I'm a Hare Krishna priest. She said, oh, I could tell there was something there. And she was very friendly. So then she gave me that classic Baptist question. So is it by faith that you're saved or by works? And I thought, wow, you know, lady, like, do I look like I was born yesterday? I mean, like, that's a real surprise that you asked me that question. So I shocked her. I said, it's by faith. And she didn't really know what to say because she's ready for me to say it's by works. And then I said, but of course, if you have faith, then you have to work for God. And she's like, yeah, that's right. Okay, see you later. Have a good day. You know? So it was a nice interfaith exchange, you know? Mukia can add it to her list of things. She can, yeah, he talks to Baptists in the Jacksonville airport. So we say it's by faith, but we also know if you have faith, then you have to perform works. You have to perform austerity. If we have faith in Krishna, he's a supreme enjoyer, right? Enjoyer, controller, friend. Then we should perform austerities as he's describing it. We should do things for him. And of course, it's also a natural thing because in this world, where there's reflections of the love that we're seeking with Krishna, we also perform austerities for the people that we care for. You know, you see parents here, there's a lot of austerities with little kids. You see grandparents, there's a lot of us. I mean, we had a friend, I had a bumper sticker. It said, grandchildren are the reward you get for not killing your teenagers. So there's also, you know, what do they mean by that? You know, there's austerity. But you do austerity for the people that you love. You know, family, you know, parents, they sacrifice a lot for their kids. I read something the other day. I should have learned the number. It was some phenomenal number. Like in America today, to raise a child will cost on average about, I think it was $300,000 or $400,000. So like every 2 or 3 kids on average, that's what it's going to cost. So then people are thinking, because they're not raised to be so selfless this day, people then start making this evaluation. I don't think I want very many kids because I don't want to have to spend that much money. But the ones they have, they spend that money. And they perform that austerity because there's love there. So therefore, Prabhupada said in this purport, our duty is to mold our life in such a way to serve and remember Krishna. And Prabhupada also, the thing that's beautiful about that, unlike material life where we perform austerities and serve so many things and at the end you lose it all, even if you get something wonderful in the end, if not before, you lose it all. The wonderful thing in Krishna consciousness is because when we serve like that, our acharyas tell us that we actually awaken love for Krishna. And it's gradual, and sometimes it's like this. For me, it's always like that. You know, it's up for a while and it's down for a while. It's like I think I'm feeling a little attraction to Krishna. And then for a while I said, Krishna, why are you treating me so roughly? And then he goes, etc. You know, I have a lot of faith, but geez, there's this doubt. So, but there's this ongoing process of naturally awakening our love for Krishna. And sometimes we actually, by His grace, it's funny because sometimes when you're a new devotee, you really get it, right? We see it. New people get sometimes this really special mercy, right? Like Narada, right? When he went, was a Narada, he went to meditate, and then Vishnu appeared in front of him, and he broke his meditation. And then he said, actually, you're not qualified to see me. Dhruva. Dhruva Narada also. No, when he was with Vyasadeva, he tells a story. When he was a boy, his mother died. He went to the forest, and he meditated. He meditated. This night you will not see, you are not qualified to see me, but I gave you this vision to inspire you. Yes, so thank you. So there's parallels there, but yeah. So I mean, Krishna gives us these extra little tastes oftentimes that we don't really deserve. But through the process of sadhana, we awaken that natural taste, param tadishtana nivartate, that taste is there. And we get glimpses of it sometimes. I can remember as a new bhakta in Denver, Mukhi mentioned Denver, literally come in front of the deities like after the sun, it's the best kirtan, it's the best lecture, it's the best prasadam, and going in front of the deities and falling down flat and just playing Krishna, Radha Govinda, please help me last and stick it out for one more week. If I can keep going Sunday through Sunday, there's some hope for me. I mean, seriously, that was my meditation. Like, I'm going to make it one more week. I know I'm going to make it one more week. And there's a story I tell often that I think is so nice. Prabhupada, in the early days with Gargamuni Prabhu at that time, when they were first learning how to pay obeisances, and Gargamuni, I guess, wasn't so sure if he needed to do it, and he told Swamiji that, I really don't feel like paying obeisances. The others are starting to do it. And Prabhupada told him, that's okay. If you don't feel like it, that's all right. Just do it, and the feeling will come. So that's such a critical element of our Krishna conscious process. Sometimes we don't feel, Prabhupada said, you don't feel like dancing, you should dance. You know, we don't feel like bowing down, we bow down. You know, we don't feel like performing a little austerity, we perform a little austerity. And as our knowledge increases and our faith increases and our experience increases, we develop more and more conviction that this is okay and this is good and it's good for me. It's ultimately good for me. Like I was thinking, just personally, you know, Mukhi gives this very nice introduction. Heartfelt, it seemed, introduction. And then I'm sitting next to my old friend Tamahar that just brings it right back down to earth. Who's she talking about? Right? And I've heard that, like, when the Romans also had some problems with overly confident leadership. So I've heard, I'm not a historian, but I've heard they would sometimes have triumphal rides of the generals through Rome and they, you know, conquered Gaul or whatever they had done at that time. And they would always have a servant on the chariot with the general whispering or shouting in their ear, probably because the crowds are screaming and yelling, you know, victory to whoever, Caesar. And the servant was there saying, you will also die one day. You will also die one day. Don't let it go to your head. You will also die one day. So, you know, the reminder's there. We may not have the taste, but if we remain humble and if we engage in service, the success is guaranteed. That's also stated in the Bhagavad Gita. So, therefore, we're advised, do our austerities, but do it for Krishna. And I was thinking, okay, great, I got to do austerities. It's Kartik month. But then I was thinking, other lectures, Prabhupada says, what austerities? It is simply joyful. Anybody heard that lecture? Maybe he said, what austerities? It's simply joyful. And of course, sometimes we're thinking like, oh, Prabhupada, I wish I had your vision. But it's a fact. I mean, what are our austerities? You got to dance. I mean, people pay a lot of money to go dances, right? Isn't it? And a lot of times, they have to get really intoxicated to dance because they don't want to dance either. But if you get intoxicated enough, then you'll dance. It's like, what do you have to do? You have to dance. Okay, well, that's not so tough. As you get older, it's a little harder, but it's not so tough. Sing and chant. Sing, okay? Singing. I'd come and sing. And we don't even like I was in choir at school. I had to try out. There's no tryout here, right? You just come and sing, you know? Like, where's the austerity? Nobody's going to, like, embarrass you. You know, it's like, did you make the cut for the kirtan this week? No, they cut me. I couldn't go. Mukhi was at the door. She said, we recorded you last week, Prabhu. You're not coming in there. You know, we don't have that. You know, it's just, where's the austerity that's there? And feasting, I mean, we all know how tough feasting is, isn't it? I mean, you remember like going to church or synagogue or somebody, you see a sign, come to church. After church, there's donuts and coffee, right? And the coffee probably got made a couple days before. And the donuts, they paid a few bucks and they bought them in a box. And they're not homemade. They're not cooked with love and devotion to Krishna. You know, there's nobody who really, really wants to see you happy. The guy there from Dunkin' Donuts, the guy's making, you know, 10 bucks an hour and he just wants to go home. That's your donuts. So that's our austerity, dancing, chanting, and feasting. And then we get, then we come and we like look at the deities. Wow, that's really austere, isn't it? Like, you know, wow, you're supposed to go see the deities. Oh, I mean, are they not beautiful enough to want us to come as often as we can every single day? I mean, that's our austerities. And then what else do we have to do? Okay, we listen to philosophy. Like sometimes I think like Bhagavatam class, what is it with these people every morning? And you know, most of us are home now and got our jobs. We try to fit in as best we can on the radio or whatever. What's our philosophy about? How to become better people? How many groups of people, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot, but not everybody, they spend a couple hours a day or an hour a day, they come together, community, talk about how to be better people. How can we become humble? They're not talking that at corporate meetings, you know. How can we, I mean, some places are trying to learn to become servant leaders, but they're not as intensely focused as we are. You know, how can I look in my heart and see that the real problem in this world is not, you know, the Democrats or the Republicans or the white folk or the black folk or the women folk. The real problem is right here. That's the real problem. My problem is here, and I need help with that. I need help with that. And you know, to live in a community. And then every once in a while, like, we throw in a festival, like with 40-foot-high beautiful carts, and you get to sing and dance again. Or, you know, you make a mountain of sweets in the middle of the room, right? Or all the beautiful things that we do. It's like, what? That's the problem. What austerity? It's just joyful. It's just joyful. You know, and, oh, I was thinking about this too. Yeah, but you guys have to wear those funny clothes. I mean, I was just watching something the other day in a TV show. And this is a little more true for the ladies than the men. There was like some TV show, devotee was there, I can't remember what it was, and they were promoting an event. So they dressed the hostess in a sari. And she was like oozing with happiness. That is so beautiful. You're going to put that on me? It's like, yeah, we do it all the time down at the temple. You know, it's like, what's the austerity, you know? And guys, I mean, you get to shave your head. No, that one doesn't fit, so let's put that one aside. But most of the austerities are like really joyful. You know, shaving your head sometimes. Prabhupada said it'd be very, right, we've all heard that. Prabhupada said it'd be very popular with bald men, our movement, right? Because we, right? Which we couldn't relate to at 20, right? Time of heart, 60, 70, you start relating to that. Yeah, it makes sense. So, I mean, those are the austerities that we perform. And I was just thinking, you know, sometimes like at Mangal Arati or at Kirtan, I'll look around and I just think, what a cool religion this is. Like we did, you know, we come and we sing and we dance. And then we sit and talk philosophy and how we can be better people. How we can stop exploiting the planet. How we can stop exploiting each other. How can we realize that God's our best friend? That's a pretty cool religion. And then we get tired of talking, we go outside and have like a 10-course feast. I mean, you know, most people in the world, they've never seen a 10-course feast. For us, it's like, only 10? There's only 3 subjects? What happened? Were you sick today, Prabhu? You know? What, white rice? And they're not flavored rice? Not 2 rices? What's going on? Isn't it? You know? Doesn't taste like ghee in a subject, Prabhu. You're cutting back, right? So these are the kind of things that we deal with. But, you know, we live in a... And it's a fact. I mean, some of you maybe came from more pious families. I don't know if I'd still be a vegetarian if it wasn't for this movement. I mean, the thought of eating animals is disgusting, but that's what most people do out there. There's a lot of wonderful pockets of it, but I don't know for sure. My father was an alcoholic. I had grandparents that were alcoholics. My brother was an alcoholic. You know, they kicked it for most of their lives, but it's in the genes. So where would I be? You know, some of us may think like that. Where would I be if it wasn't for Krishna consciousness? And certainly, you know, like I would definitely be thinking about exploiting the planet and really, you know, causing a lot more harm. Because of Prabhupada, at least I'm minimized the harm that I'm causing to the world. And I can say that's because of Krishna consciousness. And I wouldn't be doing all the things I'm doing today. So therefore, Prabhupada says, what austerity? What austerity there is. So those are some reflections on austerity. So now and we end with joyful. Okay? And we know some of the principles, okay, they're a little tough. But, you know, meat eating, okay, pretty simple. Intoxication, shoot, been there, done that. You know, that does not bring happiness. That does not bring happiness. That does not bring happiness. Gambling, wow. I lived in Las Vegas for a while. I've mentioned this before, I think. They have big billboards, you know. So-and-so casino, our slots pay 97%. They're like, 97%? The bank's only giving 1.5%, right? Mortgages, they only rip you off for 6%. 97%, woo, right? But that's not the way the math works. That means for every $100 you put in, you get 97 back. I mean, at least you're getting in credit. They've got honesty left in there, right? They've got that religious principle down. They at least tell you up front, we're going to give you $97. So you do it enough, you're going to be broke. Not only that, it becomes addictive. It's a big thing. People become addicted to the point that, maybe you've heard this, these casinos spend a lot of money flying their big gamblers in. Free, you know, free hotel, free this, free that. We will fly you out to come, because we know every time you come, you're going to drop $10,000, $20,000. That's a part of their business model, you know, because people get addicted and all that. So that's horrible. You know, illicit sex, I mean, you know, Prabhupada says it, one story Prabhupada said, so you want sex? I think it was in the UK, looked out the windows talking to somebody, he says, just pick one, you know, as far as sexual desire. And Prabhupada says again, we're not against sex. You know, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, of course, that I'd have sex hundreds of times if I could have Krishna conscious children. What we say is, okay, understand that sex is an impulse, it is often generated by lust. Lust is not satisfied unless we redirect it in a religious way. And when we do that, it gradually becomes pacified, satisfied. It's beautiful to have a wife, it's beautiful to have a husband, it's beautiful to have children. And we pure Krishna says, I am sex life. I mean, I don't know of any other tradition that says, you know, sex life is God is sex. I mean, there's some that probably say that in a very different way than we do. You know, but I mean, it's a beautiful concept. You know, it's all beautiful. And as we apply ourselves more and more, our hearts become cleansed, and we see that lust gradually starts turning into respect, and it turns into affection, and it turns into genuine care. So this joyfulness is just a natural manifestation. We look at the world, and the world is really in crisis. I think the world's always in crisis. I'm sure our parents thought it was in crisis, and their grandparents thought it was in crisis, but it's really in crisis. You know, the conflicts between nations and between political, there's so much, I live in D.C., there's so much nastiness, and between, you know, racial tension and sexual tension and economic tension, and, you know, and we said back with a pretty profound answer that oftentimes we can't even give people in a way they'll understand it because it's just too deep for them. You know, you're not that body. You hate those people because you think they're not that body. They hate you, but they don't know who you are. You're not that body. You know, just it brings it all down to like we're talking fun. It's like your house fell down. Well, you know you built your house on quicksand. No. But I got really good wiring. We got it. You know, we got the best audiovisual guy in town. Yeah, but you're on quicksand. No, you don't understand. We got the best looking. Like we overlooked the lake. No, you're on quicksand. Right. So that's like, excuse me, you're not the body? Hello? You're not the body. Of course, we have to say other things. But that's what we have there. And you know, as Prahlad told his father, your real issue is your mind. That's your only problem, it's your mind. And we have a way to try to apply that. There's a wonderful lecture, Prabhupada, in New York City, early days. And he's giving a class, and some man asks a question. He says, what about my mind? Have you heard that one? What about my mind? And Prabhupada says, take this chanting, something to this effect, take this chanting of Hare Krishna. The man comes back a second time. He says, but what about my mind? You can almost feel his pain. What about my mind? And Prabhupada said, chanting Hare Krishna. He said, but what about my mind? Prabhupada said, I have no other medicine. Like, this is the medicine. So we have that message. We have this medicine, how people become peaceful, how we can stop, minimize our exploitation of nature. Because you start seeing, wow, that tree, that's me a few lifetimes ago. You know, I could have been that tree. You know, here's this little bug crawling across the ground. I don't want to kill that little bug. There's a conscious being that is making, I don't want to hurt that bug. What to speak of, you know, red people, ground people, purple people, red, it's like, how can you... So at least we have that philosophy. We may not be so expert at acting that out, but it's there. And then there's like, so that's part of the joyfulness. But then there's this really amazing part of our philosophy to meditate on, especially in Kartik season, is this idea that God's our friend. I mean, that's heavy. I mean, with all the trouble I've got, with this messed up, God's our friend. And he's not just a friend that says, okay, did you get it right this time? Finished. You know? I remember seeing little tracks by another community, I will not mention my name. You know, God's like in a big chair, and there's a bunch of these little people walking by. I saw this when I was like, and he's like, you know, like Caesar. You know, there's two lines. And if either you know, you go to heaven and you play a harp forever, and there was a devotee who played a harp there, they're beautifully, so I don't want to minimize harps. Harps are beautiful, but it's not portrayed so well in those images. And everybody else, like, you're forever gone. We all know that's a lot of reason we became Vaishnavas. But we have this concept that Krishna's actually our best friend. And what kind of friend? You know, people think, okay, God's my best friend. Okay, maybe. But then we say, yeah, and you know what he does all the time? No, what's he do? He plays. Come on. You know? I think Nietzsche said something to that effect. I don't want to worship a God who doesn't dance. Sing and dance. It's like, hey, you know, we've got wherever he came back again, there's hope for him. I don't want to worship a God who doesn't sing and dance. I don't respect a God. Right? Worship or respect. Sing and dance. Like, there he is. He sings and he dances. And not only that, I mean, it's like this concept is like so amazing. Not only that, he's the most beautiful person. He's the most beautiful person. Whatever beauty there is, he's the most beautiful person. And where he lives is like, wow. You know? The most beautiful, like the trees bow down to give fruit, right? And he's a musician. A lot of people who are like music, right? And sometimes you find, like, you know, like you walk by, you hear like a song, you're like, you kind of stop. Oh yeah, I remember that song. When Krishna plays his flute, the rocks melt. I mean, these are descriptions of, like, it's pretty intense philosophy and religion and ideas. We've got some pretty amazing concepts. So this is in part what we're meant to meditate on at this time. And when he plays, to go back to his playfulness, like, okay, God plays, okay. Does he cheat? You know, it's like, well, sometimes he cheats, yeah. But when he cheats, it's good for you. But he actually likes to lose. Of course, he likes to win, too. There's both sides there. But sometimes he actually likes to lose. And when he loses, he carries you on his back just to, like, show you the winner. It's like, come on. That's who we celebrate, and that's the joyfulness that we have, and then he actually, you know, this Davidar Leela is so amazing. He enjoys being subservient to his devotees, Bhakti Vatsala, right? He's the devotee of his devotees. This is the nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth in our concept. It's not a light, it's not an energy, it's not a judgmental person. It's not an aloof entity someplace that, you know, the deist, right, Thomas Jefferson, started the whole thing in motion and stood back and watched what a mess they'd made. That's not. It's quite a cool conception. God is like the supreme rule maker, but our understanding is, yeah, he's the supreme rule maker, and for fun, he likes to break the rules. Really? Yeah, he likes to break the rules. And when he does, he feeds all the butter the monkeys, too, so they can get in on the play. It's a very interesting concept of the Supreme Personality of God and the Supreme Truth. So then somebody might ask us, okay, well, if there is this really wonderfully attainable person and place and relationship and all of that, it must be really tough. I mean, obviously really tough. No, we go back. It goes back to, you gotta eat a lot, right? You gotta eat prasadam and sing and dance. And that's how you get there. Well, it must be like a high bar of qualification to get in the door. Yeah, the lower you are, the more qualified you are. I was like, come on, you know. I mean, could any of us like dream something up like this? You'd have to, I mean, no playwright, no filmmaker, no novelist could ever dream of something as beautiful as the understanding of God, Krishna, given to us by our acharyas, by Prabhupada. So therefore, today's verse is, whatever you do, do it for him. Do something for him. Take the next step. And Prabhupada writes, I think, Upadeshamrita, if you take, I think it says purport, You take one step to Krishna, he takes, what, 10? I mean, come on. It's like it's too good to be true. And it is too good to be true, but it's true, because he's all good.
A real quick point on that. 1/10 of 24 hours is 2.4 hours.
Okay.
That's enough time for 16 rounds plus some other seva.
He makes it easy. He's got everything in our favor. And then on top of that, then he says here, whatever you do, drive a truck, cool, do it for me. Well, I'm a professor. Hey, that's great, do it for me. I'm an elementary school teacher, fantastic, do it for me. I like to garden. Wow. Offer it to me, you're going to go straight home, back to Godhead. You know? Well, I want to be, I paint. Wonderful. I'm a policeman. That's great. Whatever. I like to clean the floor. Great. You know, I speak Russian. Wonderful. I love Russians. I speak Ukrainian. Fantastic. I love Ukrainians. I'm an American. And they're okay, too. You know, he's just too kind, you know? And then on top of that, it's like you do all these good things for yourself, automatically you start generally caring for others. You know, you don't have to you don't have to separately care for the whales. You just kind of naturally start caring for the whales and the geese. The guy talked on the plane the other day. I want to know about the geese. We shouldn't think I care for Krishna, I don't care for anybody else. No, if you care for Krishna, you care for everybody else that much more. But we understand if I try to do it individually without Krishna, I can't make anybody happy. I can't really help anybody. But if I'm really loving Krishna, if you love Krishna, you've got to be an environmentalist. You've got to be an anti-racist. You've got to be an educationalist. You've got to be concerned about families. You've got to be concerned about monks. You've got to be concerned about Christians and Jews and Muslims and atheists and women and children, everybody. Because they're all parts and parcels of Krishna. And he wants them back. So, you know, just that's our message. It's our message. Where was it? Someplace the other day, someone was singing John Lennon's song "Imagine." Of course, he's got some atheistic words in there, but the concept of, you know, just imagine. This is our message. It's actually possible, and we devotees of Krishna, we can actually make it happen. You know, Prabhupada said, you know, help. My wife was there, you know, early on, and Prabhupada was having a little darshan with young devotees, because she was 16, so this is like 1968. She said, Prabhupada looked in the eye of every single person there, man, woman, young, old, said, I want you to open a temple. I want you to open a temple. That was his vision. I want you to open a temple. She was 16, you know, kind of a young, 16, you can still use the word girl. She was a young girl, and she asked, she said, Prabhupada, even the girls, Prabhupada said, yes, why not? There's no discrimination in Krishna consciousness. There's no distinction between men. You know, so wow, we can be part of this fantastic, we are part of it. We are part of it. So how do we do that? That's what this verse goes back to. Whatever you do, do it for Krishna. And see, develop this vision that everyone is connected to Krishna, and in this way we can manifest this joyfulness with everyone we meet. And in that mood, I just want to end with this little story, because I want to lift up an example of someone who I'm so impressed with the last week, who I think really brought Krishna consciousness down in a practical way, that we're not all going to have this same opportunity by any chance, but we all can do in our own little way, which is Prajumna Prabhu, who's the president of the Leicester Temple in the UK. For those of you that may know, Leicester is one of the most ethnically diverse areas within England. A lot of immigrant populations have moved there in the United Kingdom over the last so many years. So there's a big Muslim community, there's a big Hindu community, among others. So I don't know the exact details, but there was, I guess, like a cricket match a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago now, and India won. So oftentimes, as sports people do, especially young people, especially young men, you know, like you go out and you have a march and you're happy, and hey, why not? Let's walk through the Muslim neighborhood. And I mean, why not? We won. Hooray. We're number one. That's just the tendency, you know. Bard Mata Ki Jai. Bard Mata Ki Jai, with a bunch of people that probably came from Pakistan. You know, so they're thinking like, what are you marching through our neighborhood? Our team just lost. And you can't just like come over and shake our hands and say, good job, and you'll probably win next year. You have to gloat. Okay? You gloat. And then, you know, there's a couple stupid people in the crowd that decide to yell out, death to Pakistan. Okay, so what happens? I don't know the details. A few days, whatever, later, a group of young Muslim guys, look what they did to us. How dare they say that? They marched through the Hindu neighborhood, and naturally things escalate. I don't know what the in-between steps were. So at some point, it got a bunch of people vandalized some of the Hindu temples. And of course, some people here, they've vandalized our Hindu temples. You know, we have to strike back. And other people here, they march through the Muslim neighborhood. We have to strike back. And calmer people, and I would suggest Krishna conscious people, say, wait a minute, what's going on here? What started this? How did it go? So Prajumna Prabhu in Leicester, I don't know if this gets recorded. If it does, I want to send it to him. He had been working for a long time with the Hindu temples, and he also had good relationships with the Muslim temples, Muslim synagogues, Muslim community. So some of the Muslims groups got together and said, hey, this is not who we are. They made some public statements. We do not support these young Muslim guys going out and doing, this is not us. We've been here living in these communities with our Hindu brothers and sisters for 50 years, 100. This is not who we are. And the Hindus, someone got together and said the same thing. Prajumna worked with a group of people that got together, Hindus and Muslims, stood in front of a Hindu temple, I think. Maybe it was a synagogue. And he was asked to read the statement. So they read the statement. This is not us. We're brothers. We're sisters. We're all worshiping God. I don't know the exact words he used, but something along those lines. And we're really together. And these people, these extreme actors, these were extreme. This is not who we are. And we don't stand for that. And we're going to stand together. He got criticized from different places around the world. I read some people saying, well, did you notice the imams had his arms crossed when he was speaking? What does that mean? I'm thinking like, come on, you're like a body, mind, psychologist. Give me a break. They're all standing there together in front of the camera, and he's making these comments. And he got criticized for that. Because how can you support that side? You should be supporting our side. It's like, no. We're Vaishnavas. In the ultimate sense, there's only Krishna's side. Now, in a practical sense, we know somebody walks in here with a gun and starts shooting people. Okay, you know, we're nonviolent up to that point. We're going to stop that. But as a general philosophical principle and as a social principle, we don't want to see Hindus and Muslims. The Prabhupada says again and again, we're not Hindu. Then he'll turn around in a certain instance and say, well, of course we're Hindu. You know, that's the whole, you know, sociology, sociologically, historically, traditionally, Shastra. Hindu, yeah, of course the word wasn't there. That's a whole other story. Yeah, we're in that tradition, but if you study that tradition, the end is you're not Hindu, because you're not the body, you're not Indian, you're not, we all know this. So Prajumna had the guts, to use a nice American terminology, to stand up and make, and he got criticized for it. But I would just suggest that in this time of Kartik, and time of austerity, and time of making additional vows, in addition to like, whatever it is, eating less or reading more or chanting more, we should also take a little bit of a vow, at least an effort, that what I want to do for Kartik season is stand up, be counted, exemplifying the values of Krishna consciousness whenever I can, wherever I can, 24 hours a day, at least once a day, and that perhaps is the most important austerity we can perform. Because the world's looking, like we're all devotees because there's people to give an example for us. Preeminently Prabhupada, you know, but those of us that weren't here after Prabhupada, came after Prabhupada left, we still look to Prabhupada. But because that example, and we're meant to be those examples to people, and we're flawed, and we make a ton of mistakes, and we can't compare ourselves. But people still need somebody, like Prajumna, who stood up with his Muslim friends, with his Hindu friends, and said, enough is enough, we're not going to be part of this. And he's taken flack from other parts of the world, but that flack has not changed his opinion, and it should not change the opinion of the Hare Krishna movement, because we meant to stand up for better things. So, thank you for listening, and just a few thoughts on that. And like we heard, Prema Govinda Prabhu put that little prayer up this morning by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, really beautiful, about Krishna being a thief, and at the end mentioned something like, and that's, please come and steal my heart. So if we hear and chant and dance and feast prasadam and do a little austerity to try to exemplify Krishna consciousness, he will more and more come and steal our hearts. So, thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. If anybody wants to stay and have any kind of questions, anything, I can stay for a few minutes. I was told by some insiders that sometimes that's allowed.